Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting IMSAradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts.
Homing in on another hour completed. That puts 19 in the book, a mere five remaining. This is RS2 IMSA Radio, part of the Radio Show Limited network of channels. Johnny Palmer, Bruce Jones, and in the pit lane, it's Andrew Marriott. On into hour 20 we go. The number 9 Porsche with the tartan plaid livery for Pfaff Motorsport. In from 43rd overall. No, not 43rd overall. That's the clock ticking by, isn't it? Telling us how long the pit stop was. 20th overall, in fact. And more crucially for Pfaff, they are the GT Daytona Pro leaders. Matt Campbell brought that car in. I didn't pay close enough attention to the whole of the pit stop to work out whether they've done a driver change there as well. We will find out very shortly, though. See whether the Australian stayed on board. Around the outside will go the number 2 car of Patrick Pilet. This is a straight fight, therefore, for the top two positions in GT Daytona Pro. Returning to the racetrack, still not showing up on my screen. Matty Campbell, I'm going to predict. Yes, it is. Now, did Pilet get in front, though, of the Australian? They're both on the infield now. It really depends how cold and how difficult to control those tyres are for the number 9 Porsche. There is a slow Acura down on the lower portion of the apron, which is car 66, Bruce.
Well, that's the gradient racing one. And don't forget, the last thing they want is another puncture, because this is the car they have to lift it manually. The air jack stopped working long, long ago. So it was bad enough with the regular tyre change. But if they've got to do an extra one, it's insult to injury. And something that's just excited me a little bit. I was about to say, I complimented RDV69 for sending in the news about the race in Angola. What I didn't notice, A, it was Joshua Barrett who found this previous tweet from RDV, but RDV is no less a man than the great and sadly now late Ricardo Davila. Richard Davila, the designer of Coppa Sucar and many other things in Formula One. Fabulous, fabulous person, and, you know, a moving encyclopedia. So no wonder he probably plucked that out of his memory many, many moons later. But thanks for the pair of you.
Yes. Great research, all popping through on Twitter at RSL_studio. And so many of you getting involved wherever you are around the world, far away from 2:45 in the UK, 2:45 in Central Europe. And with a good chunk of this race still to go. I mean, we've got a sort of regular FIA World Endurance Championship race, of course, is 6 hours. So we're only just shy of that now. And GT cars pretty much doing these hour-long stints. It's a lot shorter than that for DPI. 21, 22 laps if the traffic is kind to you. My computer system has decided to do somewhat of a reset, so it'll take a stint or a couple to get the average lap times back again, but I will keep you up to date with those just as soon as they filter through again.
Yeah, quite interesting at that very moment. I was just looking to check the number of pit stops, and it suddenly said just one pit stop each.
So Andrew Marriott shaping up our former race leader who has just bailed out of the 60 car, and we'll be hearing from Elia Castroneves very shortly indeed. He's given his car over to Ollie Jarvis, who is running in second position. Mike Conway leads the race. Alexander Rossi in third, Richard Westbrook in fourth. It is a four-horse race now in the DPI section. Remember, we did for a long time have, well, 7 cars in the mix. Then we spoke to Wayne Taylor and said he couldn't believe there were 7 cars still on the lead lap. And within an hour of that statement, 2 of them had dropped away. Not blaming Wayne at all, of course. And his car, oh, there was very nearly contact there between the two Acuras. And the number 10 car closing in on the 60 of Ollie Jarvis. But that was an audacious manoeuvre from Alexander Rossi around the outside of turn number 1. Could have spelt disaster for both of the ARX 05s. Amazingly, both actually stayed on the racetrack, and there was a place change in the middle of that as well. So Rossi's up to second place now, Bruce.
Yeah, Richard Westbrook's right on the tail. I think there was actually contact with the number three Corvette down there. It's way out of the order. We heard from Jordan Taylor a short while ago. He's in the car now, and I think turning into turn one, there was side-on-side contact. Hopefully no damage, but that was again, turn one is just this magnet for something that starts a mile away when they come out of the Le Mans chicane. Just a tiny little difference in who got the power down best. Were they interrupted? And that's what brought them close together. And then the game, the guessing game you have to play when you arrive at turn one. Where am I going to place my car? There's a slower car up ahead. Do I go inside? Do I go outside? Does the car in front change angle? Oh, yes, it has. Ah, right. Options now. Limited.
On the shifts that I'm not working and in the Haggerty commentary box, often choose at least an hour to go down to the lower segment of the main grandstand to see the cars through the tri-oval and then dropping down into turn one because it is such a key area of action. And that can be where the race is won and lost. We had that amazing final place position change at the start of the final lap involving Philippe Albuquerque just a handful of years ago, the contact between the Wayne Taylor Racing car and Albuquerque. And yes, the infield is action-packed wherever you choose to spectate from, but turn one is a real pinch point, particularly when you've got GT cars trying to find track space for each other as well. Conway leading now by 18 seconds, but he owes us a pit stop compared to Rossi and Jarvis, with Richard Westbrook, as you say, right on the tail of these two Acuras as well. So a three-way dies for second. Right, so before you come in on that, Bruce Jones, we have now got Elio Castroneves. Andrew's worked incredibly hard to get the result.
Wow, what a battle this is.
Yeah, it was a big battle, but certainly the 0-1 car wasn't helping us. I know he was doing his race, but he was several laps down. It was just a little bit tough. 31 obviously took advantage of that. They just stayed. So we had more rhythm than that. Unfortunately, we just got stuck behind. But, still a lot of 5 hours to go, and we just got to keep it going.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't really started the big bit of this race yet.
No. And I tell you what, the way it looks like, it's going to be a four-car battle. And, man, it's going to be a tough one.
Anyway, we talked about this in practice, but some of our listeners probably weren't listening then. You cut your teeth racing in the UK with Paul Stewart Racing.
I tell you what, I learned so much with Jackie and Paul. We're still very much in touch with those guys. Obviously became good friends, and myself and my family. So, you know, England, it was a short live. It was only 1 year. But I really enjoy having a little family over there. So it was great. The people that I got together, we're still in touch to this day. So it's great. Who knows, one day it's going to go back. In this world, I still very much ready to keep it going and see what happens.
Yeah, I saw Jackie just the other day at his home, and he was in great form.
Thank you.
Elio, what about the rest of this race then? Are you going to go back in the car? Got one more session?
They told me to get rest, and we might go back again. So if that's what they want, I'm here.
You'll be watching it all, if not.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to give it all.
Wonderful guy, Elio Castroneves.
Great work, Andrew, and really nice to take him back a few years to his time in the UK. You will have been covering the championship in those days when he was here as well, Bruce.
No, I just moved on to the lofty uplands. The next year, I moved up to cover Formula 3000.
Okay.
I handed the coverage from Autosport magazine to Andrew Benson to do Formula 3, who's a long-time BBC Formula 1 correspondent now.
Mm.
But it was 1995. It's a very long time ago. But, you know, and particularly people who are so personable as Helio, they make fantastic relationships. And you know, there are a lot of us playing in this world, a lot of drivers, engineers, designers. You like the good guys. You make relationships. So many people, you see them, they thwart their careers because they speak out where sometimes it's better to button the lip, etc. It's life. But yep. It's just life under a lot more pressure than a lot of other life. But Helio, definitely one of the good guys, and what a career he's had. And, you know, 12 months ago, he was up on the top step of the podium here, so he'd quite like to do the same all over again. It's possible. It's more than possible. Four cars, as you said, Nostradamus, in for this final five-hour sprint, and it was a seven-car class, and the racing was fabulous to the 12-hour point, but thereafter, we just lost two in fairly short order. The 0-1 Cadillac Racing entry and the Alley Cadillac Racing entry, car number 48, had their problems, but they're out of the effective running, but the top four covered by not a lot of time at all.
and they are all on different lengths of stint so far, i.e. each of them stopped on, albeit only a difference of a lap for each one, but we are expecting in, what, about eight laps' time, Mike Conway in first, followed by, from the lead, that should be, Richard Westbrook should be next in from fourth, Alexander Rossi from second, and Ollie Jarvis has had the shortest stint so far because he pitted on lap 588 and we're now on 596, so eight laps later, expecting Jarvis in therefore in about 12 or even 13 laps time. He was making some really good mileage on a tank of fuel during the night, so that might pay dividends when we get to the real important stage of the race. I love that comment from Andrew Marriott. It's only just that this race is only really just starting now. This is the point where up until now you needed to be in the right sort of area, but the real race begins with sometimes as few as 2 hours to go.
Yeah, you know, some ways that's right, and some ways it's not so right. A bit, not disrespecting Andrew in any way, but what, you know, years gone by, a lot of the cars just weren't as, they wouldn't have really made it to this point. You had to really pussyfoot them through the first chunk of the race and then you could go for it. But now they're far more indestructible. But talking indestructible, let's go down to Mr. Indestructible. It's Andrew Marriott down in the pit lane.
Oh, thank you. I got Gary Nelson here, the boss of Action Express. Well, been in some ways a difficult race for you.
Yeah, we had a few cars run into us through the night. I think three times we got knocked off the track, and of course that puts us at the very back, and we've had to claw our way back each time, and now we're back to the front, so hopefully we can keep it there.
You've got to keep it there. It is an incredible race, this, isn't it, Gary?
Yeah, you know, people think of an endurance race as you coast around to the end, but we've been flat out the whole way.
I should know the answer to this. How many times have you managed victories here in this race?
I don't remember.
Four or five?
Yeah, four or five, I don't remember.
So thank you very much to Gary Nelson, boss of Action Express, who was a top team boss in NASCAR years ago.
And it just shows from Gary there that the most important win, generally speaking, is the last one. And you kind of forget about everything else that has gone before. Unless you get to 5, 10, 20, the big numbers you'll remember. But they're fully focused on the last race, whether they won that or not, and the current race on getting another trophy. Into the International Horseshoe. This is stellar stuff from the third, fourth and fifth place cars, but certainly from Richard Westbrook, who is trying to hold back Ollie Jarvis in the number 60 car. Last time around, Westbrook slightly better lap, 135.8. Not as good as Alexander Rossi, who is trying now to open up, or rather eat into the gap to Mike Conway. Jarvis not able to get ahead of the Heart of Racing Aston Martin into turn six, so that's driven slightly more of a wedge between the back of Westbrook's number five car of JDC Miller Motorsports and the Acura number 60.
Yeah, and Jarvis's car really struggled to get the power down early coming out of the onto the banking there.
So down,
so
the back,
let's go down again. We've got Andrew Marriott's got more to add from Gary Nelson down at the Action Express Racing Pits. Andrew.
Yeah, of course, we often refer to the cars to give them a name check of the sponsors, so we call the 31 car the Whelan Engineer Racing, and I'm not sure if you guys know, but Whelan make the flashing lights for the tops of police cars, apart from anything else. And then of course the 48 car, the other of the Action Express cars, is sponsored by Ally, which is Jimmy Johnson's a big sponsor. But I always like to name check the actual teams. And Action Express have been around in Daytona Prototype for a very long time. I believe originally it was funded by the France family when they first started with Daytona Prototype. And they always do an outstanding job. Interestingly, they bring a sort of NASCAR perspective to it as well. And also now they've got various personnel from Hendrick Racing, you know, one of the very top NASCAR teams, also working here on those cars. So... It's a very interesting group, is Action Express.
And Action Express used to be a two-car team with the five as well, but that changed a few years ago with JDC Miller Motorsports running the Mustang sampling car instead. It's the Mustang sampling machine that got the place on Ollie Jarvis. I think I might have been reading that the wrong way round. So Richard Westbrook from the infield out to Speedway Turn 1 went around the outside of Ollie Jarvis to snatch third place away and has now built up nearly a second's advantage.
Well, he was able to do so that as he completed that manoeuvre, Ollie couldn't put his car he wanted to in the number 60 Mayershank Acura and just couldn't get the power down. That's why it's opened out a second gap. But, you know, this race is so hugely international. We just heard from Rui Andrade, as he's pronounced with a sort of Portuguese end to the name, from Angola. But for a win, if you're a British sports car racing fan, you've got three of the top four cars with British English drivers on board at the moment. It will change when it hands over to their teammates, but with Mike Conway leading the race, Richard Westbrook and Oliver Jarvis doing all they can to possibly drive in the same piece of tarmac at the same time. They're running in third and fourth position, and Alexander Rossi, from their point of view, is sporting the party because he's waving the Star Spangled Banner in that second place. But at the moment, it's looking quite comfortable for, we call it the Wheel and Engineering car, but quite rightly, and I actually agree with Andrew on this, it's quite clearly the Action Express, one of their two Cadillacs, and going very well indeed. And again, I love the mixture of having more of a sort of NASCAR slant on. Yeah. Let's face it, we always know their pit work is fantastic, and it's a good thing to have.
It's a similar situation where you've got G-Drive Racing run by APR, Algarve Pro Racing. So we try and mention the sponsor at the same time, mention the team behind that initiative as well. One of the two RLL BMWs being lapped there by the 60 Acura, which skates across the curb. And Ollie Jarvis certainly not holding back in trying to hang on to the coattails of Richard Westbrook. But the number five JDC Miller car, the Mustang sampling example, looking better during this particular stint. Now, Mike Conway is being matched for speed here by one of the recovering DPI cars. So is that the 0-2? Okay, so that's a long, long way back. Question is, does Mike Conway let this car go? 14th position overall for Earl Bamber. So two of the recovering machines. The ally car of Mike Rockenfeller is 13th overall. Earl Bamber, 14th. There are actually six laps between those two recovering cars, though. There's a danger here that Earl Bamber will become more of a distraction than anything else, and Mike Conway might be wise to let him through, but the spotter way up in the grandstand needs to be telling Mike, I suppose, that the car behind is not a worry in terms of track position and where safe. You might just want to allow Earl Bamber through. Oh, he's all crossed up, and that's done the job, in fact, because Mike Conway, either too late on the brakes or there just wasn't any grip out on the high side of the Western Horseshoe, and I noticed that tank slapper that he had very early on indeed. Brilliant car control to not fully lurch onto the grass, but that will have grabbed his attention.
It really will. So the deed is done, whether he wanted it or not.
But, exactly.
It was very fortunate that there's a fair bit of grass there, but actually the tyre wall on the outside would come up very quickly indeed. Because let's face it, we were talking through the night about not if, but where the frost would settle. We thought it wouldn't settle on the circuit. It would be on the grass. So yes, the sun's been up for a few hours, but it's still not a lot of degrees, not a whole handful there. And so he definitely didn't want to get far onto the grass. Just managed to get the race-leading Wheel and Engineering number 31 Cadillac around that corner at turn three, but he's done it very well indeed. 10 seconds is the advantage for Conway over Rossi, so it's 31 Cadillac from the number 10 Acura, Wayne Taylor's car, as going to Andrew's point, Konica Minolta Acura, but we know run by Wayne Taylor Racing.
The other thing that strikes me is that Mike Conway, so used to the new Toyota GR010 and before that the TSO50, with all of its extra turning vanes and aerodynamic assists, these DPI cars are slightly more rudimentary than that. They're big, heavy cars in terms of the power plant that sits in the middle of them. They don't have as much aero on them, and I think you have to be happy with the car moving beneath you, which is not something that Mike necessarily has to deal with a great deal in the World Endurance Championship. So having to always remember what type of car he's on board, don't get me wrong, I love the nature of these cars. They're deliberately designed in that respect to mean that they can be difficult to control, particularly on the infield at slower speeds where you don't have the aero grip. You're reliant on the mechanical grip, if nothing else. And these prototypes don't have a great deal of that, as we found during the night in the colder temperatures. Through turn six and out of it into speedway turn one will go the 60 car of Ollie Jarvis.
And while that's all happening, it sounds like the story of sports car racing, a Ferrari Porsche battle. That's something that's been going on for a very long time, but second and third places, well, it's Porsche Ferrari and GTD Pro, but second and third, Jaminet in the number 9 Pfaff Motorsport Porsche is having a real handful keeping the 62 Ferrari Rizzi Competizione Ferrari of Alessandro Pierguidi behind him. Second and third, they're 19 seconds down on Patrick Pilet. I said the KCMG car's just finding a sweet spot. That's looking quite comfortable, but Jaminet will not be comfortable because Pierguidi all over him.
Another lap ticked off for Mike Conway. Remember, of the four leading DPIs, he will be the first in. That will complete 19 laps on the stint, so he might even pit as early as the next lap, but I would expect it to be eked out to 21. 136.4 on the average time, so showing no indication of any fuel save yet. That's something else to bear in mind with four different cars on different fuel strategies, albeit only by a handful of laps. But compared to Mike Conway, who should pit first, and Ollie Jarvis, who should pit last of the leading quartet, 1, 2, 3, 4 laps separate them. Full throttle for the Inception Racing McLaren through the really quick stuff on the high banks, as the number 9 car of Mathieu Jaminet. Now, where is Patrick Pilet in all of this? Because he leads the class. He's 18 and a half seconds further up the road, leaving the two a long way behind, Mathieu Jaminet and Alessandro Pierguidi, to fight it out for the other two steps on the podium.
I actually think they might have a little bit more pace than he. In fact, last time round they were faster than he was, and that's including the fact they're fighting with each other. So, sitting pretty, Patrick Pilet at the front. All he's got track position. That's what you want. You don't want any sort of yellow flag moments that might close them down. But the Pfaff Motorsport car has been very much in the mix in GTD Pro from the outset, and Mathieu Jaminet, who's just had a fantastic handful of years in the cars from Porsche, is having to work pretty hard right now. Alessandro Pierguidi all over his tail. They've got a BMW right in front of them using its toe. I'm going to try and sweep around the outside, and certainly any slip up from Jaminet and Pierguidi's going to pounce for Rizzi Competizione.
Another hour ticked off, by the way, so 9 o'clock in the morning, with side by side heading through into the chicane on the back straight, the Le Mans chicane. Just ticked by at 3 minutes past 9 local time now. 4 hours and 38 minutes to go as we go to the pits and get this from Andrew Marriott.
Yeah, I've got Jonathan Bonamorito just out of the car here, the PR1 Matheson racing car. Jonathan, of course, remember him racing wipers and all sorts of things. We call him JB. JB's just had a bit of discussion. You can't hear anything. JB, bit of a challenging night for you, really. I think you're running in about 7th place at the moment.
Yeah, we lost some laps. It's a bit frustrating, but that's this race, you know? The ups and downs. There hasn't really been in much yellow, well, enough yellow from the 12-hour mark on to really get enough laps back to do anything with it, but we're going to keep it running. We're having fun. Get Steve and Thomas more seat time. And, you know, we'll do what we can. But it's frustrating. But we're not the only ones in that boat, I guess.
Obviously, in the past, JB, you've been a factory driver. And this is a slightly different operation, but still a very professional one.
Yeah, I actually raced for Bobby Orgel, PR1 Motorsports, and ran Leslie Matheson with Matheson Motorsports, and then they converged, and now I'm back with them both. So that's kind of cool. Definitely a homecoming in that way. Awesome people. I'm happy to be here. And, you know, it's new. They expanded it to 2 cars, and there's a lot of work that comes into play with that. And then you have the hardest race of the year being the 25-hour race to start it off. So it's definitely a steep learning curve, but we're doing good. Everybody's really putting their heads down and getting through it.
You've seen this championship through going back to the ALMS, and it's really grown now, hasn't it? It's fabulous at the moment.
this. Sorry, I missed you. This year.
Yeah, sorry. This you've been around this championship and the ALMS before for many years, and now we're seeing it really coming to a zenith. It's terrific.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, really. All the classes are flourishing with LMDH coming. The GTLM and GT3 class all won, I think, is cool. It's awesome, but when you're in the prototype and you have to go through 30-something GT cars, you don't think it's awesome in the moment, but it is really good for the series, it's good for the sport, and I think there's a bright future ahead.
Time for breakfast, I think.
Breakfast, lunch, dinner, I don't know what time of day it is anymore.
That's the nature of a 24-hour race, isn't it? That's why we love it. I haven't got a clue what time of day it is most of the time. I can tell you the sun is up, and that is a welcome addition after so many hours of darkness and fabulous smell all the way around the raceway as well, as people are either having, an early brunch or a late breakfast. Some might have thought they were good enough to stay up all night and then got to maybe 4 or 5 o'clock and had to have a snooze. But bit of sausage bacon, some scrambled or fried eggs, that will see you right for the final 4.5 hours. And thank you for tuning in to RS2 IMSA Radio to witness it all with us. Bruce Jones and Johnny Palmer for the next couple of hours. And then we'll hand things back to Jeremy Shaw and John Hindoff here in the Global Commentary Box, the Haggerty Global Commentary Box, for the final run to the flag. But so much more for this race to give yet, I think. By the way, by saying the race really starts now, wasn't necessarily suggesting that people haven't been all out all night. But the tactics sometimes can change. So whereas you might be happy to allow a car that you're battling to get through, purely because it's going to hold you up in scrapping with it, in the final 2 hours, that strategy goes out the window. And it's no-holds-barred motorsport all the way to the finish to... that's when sometimes, you don't like to see it always, but cars will start to take chunks out of others to try and win this all-important race. This championship, remember, starts with the most important race of the year as round one. And this is where so many prizes are on offer, not least the Rolex watch, but a whole load of championship points as well that will set you up perfectly heading into the Sebring 12 hours in a couple of months' time.
Well, you think back over recent years how they kept on changing around. I was going to talk about the World Endurance Championship, but Andrew's been fishing, and very effectively. He's got Daniel Serra, and his car is being thrown around the circuit right now. Andrew, down to you.
Yeah, I'm up on the pit perch, or sometimes called Pratt perch, but we're not allowed to say that anymore, with Daniel Serra. So I'm sitting comfortably. So is Daniel. Well, this is a big battle with Porsche, isn't it, Daniel? Just what we expected, really.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Let's see how it goes. 4.5 hours are still long. Still long way to go. Let's see. We are giving all we have. And hopefully we'll see a good fight for the fans.
You're such a well-matched team, the four of you. Such a well-matched team of drivers.
Yeah, the lineup is amazing. Ali, James and David are top drivers. It's really a dream to drive with them.
Will you go back in the car?
No, I'm done.
He's done a great job, Daniel Serra. Bruce will remember his dad, Chico, who was a Formula 1 driver for a while.
I remember watching him in Formula 3 back when he used to compete against the likes of Nelson Piquet and Derek Warwick. Great years for them in the British Formula 3 Championship. But thanks for putting another link to my advanced years, Andrew.
But he's the most recent addition into the FIA World Endurance Championship, I think I'm right in saying. He was for a long time, the driver that they used to bring in as the third option for the 24 hours of Le Mans, and sometimes AF Corsa would bring in the third driver for the 10-hour races, and indeed the 1,000-kilometre races, but now a mainstay with AF Corsa and the FIA WEC. Knows this place pretty well, too. A former Brazilian stock car champion as well 2 years ago. So likes his touring car type machines as well as Grand Tourers.
And since I first met Daniel, his English has come on in leaps and bounds. He didn't used to feel confident. I think I've met him for the first time at the Silverstone WEC round, but it could have been about 4 years ago, whatever. But just to touch on this championship kicks off with its biggest race in the shuffling of the World Endurance Championship when it started going across two seasons. We got to the moment where one of the World Championships ended with Le Mans, the final race, which is sort of the natural conclusion, the double points, extra glory, or double points, for quadruple glory event. It's now changed again. It was something that really does add, but I actually think there's also, I suppose you could say, if you drop the ball here, don't start the season with a big result, then you're always fighting to get back. But it is what it is, and actually, I like the history of this event kicking it all off. It fits in the motorsport calendar when it fits. A lot of the crews be going, could we actually have it a time of year where the track isn't freezing in the night? But this was a freakishly cold event, and anybody who's been out around the circuit, and really huge applause to all the track workers. They've done a phenomenal job in really, really difficult conditions.
And because the Raw falls before this event to form the grid as it did this year, then it's almost a kind of all the teams assemble for pretty much the whole of January, maybe a week off after New Year, but then start to set up for the Raw before the 24th. And then the various test sessions, practice sessions before you get to the main race as well. So you have the month of May for Indianapolis and the 500 there. The month of January focused on the Rolex 24. Slightly concerned about some smoke coming out the back of a McLaren there. I think it was just tyre smoke escaping from the rear valance of that car, maybe from the front tyres, and the way that the ground effect works on these GT cars, it channels that smoke, the tyre smoke, all the way down the underneath of the car, and it escapes out the back. But if that's something more concerning, i.e. from the engine, don't want to see that, we'll keep an eye on it. But the 70 car that leads the GT Daytona standard class, which is the Inception Racing McLaren, really going well at this stage. Frederik Schandorf, who is the silver-rated Dane, partnering up with Brendan Erie, who's the bronze, Ollie Milroy, who had a stint, or a good few stints earlier on, and Jordan Pepper, who's enjoyed some time at the lead of that class as well, behind the wheel of the British sports car. Only 0.6 of a second, though, Schandorf's advantage over Richard Lietz, driving the 16 Wright Motorsports car for the Austrian.
One of the things I just always enjoy is just, I'm about to say something, Andrew's been so super productive, he's got another interview. Andrew, who's your latest?
Yeah, I've got Matt Campbell, and Matt very kindly come down off the perch where he was wrapped in a big blue blanket trying to keep warm. Matt,
yeah, it's still quite cold in the morning, it's still very difficult on the outlaps and trying to stay on track, but nevertheless we're running at the front and everything's going quite okay towards the end of the race.
Yeah, it's a huge battle. I've just been down with the Ferrari. They seem quite confident. I'm sure you're pretty confident as well. And the Porsche, hopefully, is bulletproof.
Yeah, I think so. It's proved as well this race. We have a clean car. Balance is good. And, obviously, we're in the mix towards the end of the race. Still need a couple more hours to tick over before we really get stuck in. But nevertheless, it's looking okay, and we're running at the front.
You've done a lot of WEC races in Porsches, of course. How do you compare it with racing at Daytona and in this championship? Because you've got to remember the rules are quite different on certain aspects.
Yeah, quite different. I mean, obviously IMSA is so unique, and also Daytona as well. You know, we don't have anything like this anywhere else in the world, and it's so cool to come here every year and compete in the 24. And, you know, obviously this year it's a new challenge as well with the new category in GDD Pro. So that's really exciting, and really happy to be in the US for the first time for a full season with Mathieu.
Absolutely, you have. Have you ever driven an Aussie supercar?
Yeah, done a few endurance races before. Did it last year and a few years before that as well. And I love to get back and try and do it every year. But obviously my duties with Porsche come first. This is what I want to be doing. But nevertheless, it's always good to go back home and have some fun in supercars.
Always good to go to Bathurst as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's my favourite track in the world. And any excuse to go back home is a good one.
I think it's going to be a battle of the finish. Really appreciate you coming off and unwrapping yourself in that blanket.
Thank you.
He was a winner of the Bathurst 12-hour in 2018, 19, one of the two, with a spectacular overtake in the closing stages. He was put in for the final stint, understandably, and threw the thing around like a Porsche Carrera Cup car rather than
2019.
GT. 19. Thank you, Bruce. I knew you'd have that at your fingertips.
On my pieces of paper. I have many pieces of paper.
The other interesting driver in that number 9 Pfaff Motorsport car, though, is Felipe Nasr, who I don't think he's ever driven a GT car prior to this weekend. And this is the nature of changing the GT Daytona landscape, bringing in the pro bit of it. And there are fewer DPI cars. But, of course, NASA previously a real regular in DPI. Speaking of which, stonking battle down towards turn one between an Acura and a Cadillac. On a bit of a lock-up there from Alexander Rossi in the Wayne Taylor Racing. Konica Minolta Acura, which allows Pipo Derani through and into second place. He's got a Corvette to deal with from the GT Daytona Pro class. Lights appearing to flash on the rear, but I think they are static. Being LED lights for the rear of the Whelen Racing car, but from a long way back, seemingly, this car's had a habit of doing this. He did a spectacular move in the night when Kevin Magnussen, in the other Cadillac, Kevin Magnussen came from a long way back in the 0-2. This time, it is the 31 of Pipo Derani who forced the mistake from Alexander Rossi. He needed to tuck to the inside line and just asked a bit too much of the tyres. They weren't having it.
I think that's the thing. You know, in the night, we acknowledged it was really, really cold. But now, you look at the images, sunshine, glorious sunrise. You think there must be heat. There isn't a whole lot of heat. And just to see cars understeering like that into turn one, clearly just braked a tiny bit too late for the tyres as they are. Would be perfectly good if it was another 5 degrees warmer. But ceding that second position, Alexander Rossi will have to fight back again for the number 10 entry run by Wayne Taylor Racing, sponsored by Konica Minolta. But again, just such a fantastic battle down into turn one. But really, it was a very, very brave dive by Derani. He committed himself to the inside line, and luckily, suddenly, instead of being just a car's width wide, with Rossi going wide, it became two car widths wide. Thank you very much.
Yeah. But the Acura not dropping away hugely. And again, it's onto the straight line segments that the ARX05 seems to favour. The Cadillac, maybe with its heavier mid-mounted engine, just is better in the slower speed corners where you need good traction, good drive. And again, the 31 car is just scampering away coming out of the Western Horseshoe. And at the moment, Alexander Rossi just cannot find a response to that. And I think it's a similar situation for Simon Pagenaud. Different team, but same chassis for Meyer Shank Racing with Kerb Agajanian. And the Acura DPI, yes, it's terrific through the air, through the speedway corners, at high speed and in the higher gears, but can't match the big caddies on the flatter sections on the infield. And through they will go into the first corner. Slight grimace there for Alexander Rossi as he watches the Cadillac become a smaller and smaller speck on the horizon. Pipo Derani into a clear second place. And the question is now, can he be consistent enough to reel in Richard Westbrook 6 seconds away? But on the previous lap, he managed to find 0.6 of a second.
Yep. Obviously, traffic will be an issue. But what I always find intriguing is when you get a shot looking across, a sort of cockpit shot at the face of a driver, you know, they're thinking ahead. They're thinking what's up ahead. But you're in a battle for second position in the Daytona 24 hours. You've got a fabulous scrap with Pipo Derani. You're looking at the face of Alexander Rossi, whatever. But he's looking up ahead. He must be thinking, oh, no, 5 GT cars fighting for position. Will one of us get through, 2 of us, or neither of us? And where can I possibly use the traffic to my advantage? But it's always been a feature of the Daytona 24 hours. And the track, that infield section, it's nip and it's tuck, and at the moment, no front-end grip for any of them. It's really, really difficult. But I guess the image of Daytona in the 24 hours is the cars up on the banking. And of course, you tend to see the prototypes going high, the GTs staying low. But it's not a given, because we've seen lots of drivers threading the eye of the needle, and every time it makes you draw your breath in. But I'd say, actually, they've all performed really admirably. I think the driving has been very good indeed. Under cover of darkness, there was some side-by-side clashes, and certainly part of racing team, really unfortunate for them to lose the number 23 in the cover of darkness. Their Aston Martin out of the GTD Pro class, and but there will always be casualties, unfortunately, in motor racing, and theirs was one of them in the night.
They were not the first and will not be the last. Phil Hansen from the LMP2 field heading down pit lane to be one of the first of the secondary prototype class to pit. So therefore, expecting Louis Delatraz in, still in about 11 laps time, actually. So Phil has found his way off that more common pit lane switch around. So Patricio Award, Mikkel Jensen, Louis Delatraz, their stops only separated by 2 laps, really. whereas Phil Hansen nears the end, or has just got to the end of a 20-lap stint, which is decent going in LMP2. Patricio O'Ward has done a 21-lap stint not too long ago. Mikkel Jensen likewise as well. It depends whether you can get a bit of fuel save here and there, maybe lift and coast when you know you're about to hit a wall of traffic. But it's a short lap round here, 3.5 miles, 90 seconds at the wheel of a DPI car. But even so, even though it's such a short lap, it still takes quite a lot to eke out the fuel performance to gain a full lap on a stint. Half a lap, 9/10 of a lap is no good.
The pressure is finally off Matteo Jaminet because that pesky Ferrari, the Rizzi Competizione Ferrari, car number 62, is in the pit lane. Alessandro Pierguidi, that was troubling Matteo Jaminet for second position in class. Don't forget that wasn't the lead, because that's another Porsche leading GTD Pro, and it's number two car from KCMG in its long-standing blue and white race livery, which they've draped over an awful lot of cars over the years, and single seaters as well for the team based in Hong Kong. But KCMG leading the way. Patrick Pile, 15 seconds to good over Matteo Jaminet, who has now got a decent margin over the car that's been elevated to third in class. It's the Vassar Sullivan Racing Lexus, car number 14, with Carl Kirkwood, very much one of the coming men on the American racing scene. And meanwhile, that 62 Ferrari out of the pits again, Pierguidi staying on board. And of course, as the pit sequence unravels, he may be back in that lead group all over again.
Down towards turn one will go Richard Westbrook for once for Westy. A relatively clear road ahead. And he will peer around the Western Horseshoe to now see a lot of cars. So has to play this one cannily. So we can go back to the pit lane because we've got a couple of Porsches in the GT Daytona Pro mixture, one of which is the KCMG example, earlier driven by Dennis Olsen, who's now with Andrew Marriott.
I'm sorry, that's a negative. I was halfway up the ladder to the perch where Dennis Olsen was sitting with a helmet, but the team thought I wasn't appropriate to interview him, so I've been shuffled out of the garage.
Oh, dear.
I know Dennis is a super guy, you know, but there's some PR person between us and him. And, we first saw him racing in Creventic, didn't we? I remember seeing him 2, 4, or 5 years ago. But young Norwegian driver, maybe I'll get him a bit later.
Yeah, well, there's time yet. And as you say, if he knows it's you coming calling, he will be very eager to spend a couple of minutes of his time. I wonder whether that is because the fact that you've been shuffled away, that he's due to take the car over fairly shortly. Although Pile, I thought, was still installed for a little while. What do you reckon then? Is Dennis due to go in the car imminently, Andrew?
Yeah, they told me he's going in the car in 10 minutes.
Okay, so 24 laps done for Patrick Pile. 10 minutes will give us another 5 laps. That's about smack on, actually. 29 lap stint. Sometimes the GT cars can get to 30, but no further. As in from second position in the LMP2 class is Kai van Baerle. In fact, he was leading.
He was leading, and Nick Johnson, staying out in 54, managed to take the P3 class lead. But it's been a really good run from Kai van Baerle. He and his brother Glenn van Baerle, you know, doing an increasing amount of prototype racing. Again, more young Dutch racers embracing cars. But I must say, the 74 car presented by Riley Motorsport does look absolutely fantastic. The livery at the moment, that's a bright orangey red. With the blue looks crisp. The Inception Racing McLaren is in the pit lane at the moment, clean screen being cleaned, and that's the car shared by Brendan Uribe, Frederick Schandorf, who probably brought it in. Yes, he did. Ollie Milroy and Jordan Pepper, and it's the car that McLaren is pinning all its hopes on, because the other McLaren, the Crucial Motorsports one, had its problems early on.
Away it goes, sounding glorious in the process. And now the all-important duty is to desperately try and get some tyre temperature and pressure up, even in the pit lane, because that might make the difference. With the Batmobile-style steering wheel attached to the column, so no top and lower piece to it. It is just where your hands go. That's the modern-day, has been for a few years now, type steering wheel. Endless amount of buttons on the front and quite probably back as well. So you need to know where all of those crucial telemetry instructions are to the car's ECU and also to message back to the crew on the pit perch if you want any advice about what to do next, or indeed want to acknowledge a message that suggests you might have to come in the next few laps for some fuel. But we know that McLaren will be fine for 30 odd laps or so, and new driver in, well, still shown as Frederik Schandorf, but there was a driver change there, was there not? Perhaps not, actually.
No, I don't think there was. Okay. I'm fairly sure I saw the red and white stripe at the bottom of his helmet. He's a Dane. It's a Danish flag. So I think Frederik Schandorf is correctly still in the car.
Okay. 12 seconds away from Richard Leitz, who now leads the class for Wright Motorsports and their teal turquoise Porsche number 16. Simon Mann, who we're hearing from not too long ago with Andrew Marriott, running in third position now in the 21 car for AF Corsa. And in fourth place in GT Daytona, it's the 44 Aston for Johnny Adam, sharing with Spencer Pompelli, Andy Lally, who spent a long time overnight in the class lead, and joined by bronze-rated John Potter at Magnus Racing.
Just looking to see that lead group. We've got the top four cars in the race. Richard Westbrook, Pipo Durrani, Alexander Rossi, Simon Pagano, respectively, in the number five JDC Miller Motorsports Cadillac. That's Westbrook's car. He's only 3.8 seconds clear, but the point is under 15 seconds cover all four of them. And in terms of race pace at the moment, it's Alexander Rossi who's setting the pace. He's third. He's started to close in on Durrani, who, guess what, is closing in on Richard Westbrook. This is fantastic.
Whilst we enjoy this out on the track, let's get to Riley Motorsports. Andrew Marriott has found the Ligier run by the 74 crew.
Yeah, I just thought I'd leg it down. I thought I'd leg it down here and check about that driver change. I can confirm the drivers from Holland, Van Merlo, K. Van Merlo, stayed in the car. So everybody seems calm down here at the 74 Ranch Resort. I wonder what 74 Ranch Resort is. It's presumably some lovely place where you go and ride horses.
Sounds very picturesque,
and,
doesn't
yeah,
it?
Well, yeah. We've just got another MP3 car in, so I'm going to pop up to the 38. This is a performance tech car, and this is a car which has got the big pole they have with the lights and the fuel on them. On the top of that is a pink flamingo. Garrett Gris just got out of the car. I'm going to grab Garrett in a minute. Canadian driver who raced in Indy Lights in the past, but we've seen him racing in the Asian Le Mans Series with the United as well. He's got a lot of experience now.
Yeah, also a mixture of teams in the European Le Mans Series. Does a fair bit in the Michelin Le Mans Cup that supports that category as well. He's a busy boy, is Garrett Gris from Grimsby, I seem to remember, but not the Grimsby in the northeast of England, Grimsby, Canada, and spends quite a bit of his time in Europe now because of the deals that he's got rumbling. Exciting plans, I'm sure, for the rest of 2022 as well. The number five car for Richard Westbrook now leading, but only by 1.7 seconds, so that gap is coming down and down, and now being monstered by a recovering Chip Ganassi racing car. So Marcus Ericsson quite possibly, or is it the 01 of Renger van der Zande again? The problem is that these Chip Ganassi cars were always going to be quick, even though they've encountered problems along the way. So let's get back to Andrew Marriott, who's managed now to find Garrett Grist.
Yeah, Garrett's down here. Garrett, it's been a while since I saw you. I think over in Malaysia or somewhere, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was the last round of Asian Le Mans Sepang, right? Yeah.
You've made some great progress in LMP racing since then, though.
Yeah. I mean, this is going to be my first year back in the U.S. Done the last 4 years in ELMS, Le Mans Cup, Asian Le Mans. It's a great class. I've been loving it.
Are you going to do this whole championship with performance tech?
So I'm signed to do the whole championship with Junior 3.
All right.
But this isn't a points race, and we got our new car a month or two ago, so it was just too rushed to do it. So I'll be a Junior 3 full-time, and I'm just here for a one-off with these guys.
How's the track conditions now? There must be a lot of rubber down.
Quite a bit of rubber. I mean, with IMSA, you have so many yellows, and there's such long yellows that usually a lot of stuff gets blown off, which is nice. It's not like, you know, Le Mans, for instance, where they don't really do that. So, definitely, it's not great, but not bad.
So what are you going to miss about Europe?
The food?
Yeah, I thought you'd say that. Yeah.
No, I mean, ELMS is one of the best race series in the world, as you see by the car count. But no, definitely the competition so high in P3, the team level so high in P3. But yeah, no, just I love going to Europe, the cities, the food, the atmosphere, the level of racing so high. But no, I'm happy to be back in the States and look forward to being here for multiple years.
Great work. Super guy, Garrett Gris, thank you very much.
Still only 26, so you would thought a long career ahead of him if he should choose that path in prototype racing. Maybe some GT racing as well that he's done less of, but there's always the scope. Felipe Nasser taking part in his first ever GT race, by my reckoning, this weekend, providing a further option. 79 car rejoining the race with some erratic steering necessary to get tyre temperature and pressure up in the front for Alessio Picariello.
He's a long, long way down, but Johnny, cast your mind back not so long ago. We had him spinning off the circuit and very nearly collecting, the KCMG Porsche that's leading the GTD Pro class. I can't remember who was at the wheel at the time, but it was going into turn number four and suddenly backwards across the grass. Unfortunately, there was an access road there, so the tarmac actually slowed him down a little bit, but it was freezing cold tarmac, so not very much. Then a bit of grass, then across the track, then just stopped by the wall. But for that car, the fastest, the best placed cars in GTD Pro have got how many laps under the wheels? 582, and Picariello's car 540. To do the maths, 40 laps in arrears. So just plugging around. It's going to take a long time to get above 40th position. But again, we talked about this a short while ago, Johnny. Having this, the big one, the Daytona 24 Hours, at the start of the championship, it can put you on the back foot a little bit if you take a tumble in this one. They haven't had a big tumble, but 40 laps is a lot of time lost for that number 79 Porsche.
It's over a stint. It's a stint and a third, in fact. Picariello's just done 29 laps behind the wheel of that said Porsche, the 79 WeatherTech entry, and installed for another same amount, by which point I'm sure he'll be due for a driver change. The head of the order, Richard Westbrook's gap to Fibo Dirani is absolutely nothing now. 0.3 of a second as Pipo has been getting closer and closer to the British driver. 3.2 seconds away from the two leading Cadillacs is Alexander Rossi in the best of the Acuras. So it's two caddies, two ARX 05s, and really, you could stick a pin in any one of those to say that they will be the winner. Yes, the Cadillacs looking stronger towards the end of their stints. We're only five laps away, I reckon, from Richard Westbrook requiring some more fuel. Pipo is due in a lap before that, though. So ideally for Dirani, he'll want to be ahead on the road of the 05 car to maximise that small chance of opening up a gap. He spent much of this stint closing in on Westbrook, but if he can get past him and then build a lead of 2 or 3 seconds before coming in, that could be very, very valuable once you wind the clock forward by 4 and a bit hours. Nose to tail, coming out of the Western Horseshoe. No way through underneath Westbrook. Having said that, Westbrook just misjudged his braking point very slightly, and Pipo Dirani's not going to be asked twice there. Slices up the inside out of turn six. Opportunist move, but the one man you would choose in the whole of the entry to take it is Pipo Dirani.
Well, you know what? That 31 Cadillac entered by Action Express Racing, it just seems to have really, really good grip and grunt when it needs to get out of corners. And there was absolutely all choice for the Brazilian racer Dirani as to where he put the car. And Westbrook sort of, running perfectly good line through turn 6 and 7, just couldn't get the car to turn in where he wanted. And the advantage gained, not just track position, but stretching away, just pointing out again how good the traction was for the number 31 Cadillac as they go towards the Le Mans chicane. Around the banking beforehand, the advantage is about half a second, opened it out very nicely. And I want to just check, did Alexander Rossi gain a little bit in third place? I sense he probably did, so just got to look to see where the blue Acura is. That's the number 10 from Wayne Taylor Racing.
By my reckoning, just heading out of turn one now, and Richard Westbrook, having been overtaken by Pipo Dirani, now has the pressure of Again, struggling to tell the difference between those two Chip Ganassi Racing Cadillac entries. It's either 01 or 02. So Renger van der Zande or Marcus Ericsson looking to get the place. It is Ericsson. He'll go around the outside of Richard Westbrook. So scored as sixth place of the seven DPIs. So that does indeed mean it's Marcus Ericsson with pretty much all of the LMP2 field still ahead of him on the timing screen. He is 14th overall. Does Westy just allow that 0-2 car through because it might be a touch faster in this phase of the race? Just over 240 minutes still to elapse, and we are 25 to 10 in the morning at Daytona for the 60th running of the Rolex 24 live on IMSA Radio RS2, part of the Radio Show Limited network of channels. In the Haggerty commentary box, it is Bruce Jones and Johnny Palmer, and pounding the pit lane, Andrew Marriott. Out of Speedway turn four comes Pipa Dirani, still good for another three or four laps, and this is what I was suggesting would be a great scenario for Pipa, to have got the lead and now to be building this advantage as the car's getting nice and light. The tyres may have given their best, although knowing Pipa, he will have looked after them in the early phase of the race.
Well, he doesn't put any weight through the tyres. He's absolutely one of the lightest, smallest drivers you find in the paddock. Now, if you want a scrap for class lead, you can look back to GTD, because Jan Halen leading in the 16 Wright Motorsport Porsche, but down the inside or on the lower part of the track as they hit the banking, it's Frederik Sandhoff, and he's got the nose of the McLaren in front. That's car number 70 from Inception Racing. He's in the right position to get into the Le Mans chicane in front, does it very well indeed. Jan Halen's been around the block enough times to go, you know what, okay, good job through that corner onto the banking for the first time. But all along they've got a prototype trying to sweep past them as they go past another car, another GTD class car, but not running at their pace. But it's a great little lead battle. 26th and 27th overall is going one way, going the other, a Belgian racer against a Dane, and the Dane is now in front in the McLaren.
We've also reached the point where the leaders in the GT Daytona Pro class need to stop for some fuel, and quite possibly a driver change as well, because Mathieu Jaminet has just completed 30 laps. Now, did he do the previous stint as well? No, that was Matt Campbell. So Jaminet should be fine for another 30 lapper. Patrick Pilet, actually these two cars haven't yet come in, but Kyle Kirkwood did. Patrick Assenheimer also in, so that was a 31 lap stint for Kirkwood in his Vassar Sullivan Lexus, and Assenheimer did 30 laps in the number 15 WeatherTech sponsored Proton USA Mercedes.
Back in the day, whenever that day was, of course, you saw what you saw, you missed what you didn't get to see. But of course, these days, there are so many cameras, so many angles, and so many places in which people can put things up. Do you remember under cover of darkness, we saw the Magnus Racing Aston Martin having a little off at the Le Mans chicane?
I do, yes.
Well, it's helped on its way. I've just seen a little video clip from that. So it lost time. Don't think it picked up any particular damage, but certainly wouldn't have been a huge amount of fun. But all the drivers in that team are known as Lord this weekend because of their addiction, Magnus Racing, with Monty Python events, and it's been a very good theme for them to pull up. And so I think it was Lord Spencer at the time at the wheel, Lord Spencer Pompelli,
yes,
who brought the car back around. But anyhow, that was a sort of lucky miss. Might not have felt lucky at the time, but you did the miss, and that's the good thing.
Yeah, I seem to remember it tangled with a prototype into the Le Mans chicane.
There were about a dozen cars piling in, you know,
difficult
dark
to tell,
headlights, etc. But only one car left the track where it didn't need to, and unfortunately that was the Magnus Aston Martin.
Yeah, and from our viewpoint, we only got kind of one, although some replays to describe to you as well, but they were all from the same angle, and it's very difficult to get the perspective. Side by side then for the GT Daytona class, and that was a few moments ago when Jan Halen lost the lead to Frederik Sandhoff, but it was all set up a few corners before, eventually decided into the Le Mans chicane, but it was a good run, in fact, off the infield and up onto the banking for the Inception Racing McLaren. Let's go back to the pit lane to hear this from Andrew Marriott.
Yeah, Mathieu Jaminet's just got his crash helmet off. Well, this is a huge battle, isn't it, with the other Porsche and the Ferrari?
Yeah, I would say it's a dogfight. I mean, it's a dogfight. I mean, it's been a crazy race until now. We see, I mean, the gaps are super close. You need to to leave everything on track, and even more, we start to have a crazy battle. I had a good fight with the Ferrari until the incident with the P2.
Yeah, what happened there?
I mean, I couldn't really see. I just saw that the P2 car tried to pass around the outside and spun. And then, yeah, I didn't know if he had contact or whatever. But from my side, we were safe. And yeah, just a good five. Claimed to second, I think, slightly close the gap to the lead. So
yeah, well done.
Yeah, it's looking good, but it's still 4 hours to go. So in the end, we slowly coming to the end, build up the pace and the strategy, and make sure we are there to fight in the last hour.
Will you be fighting at the end, or have you done your stuff?
Sorry?
Will you be in the car again?
Yeah, I'll be in the car again.
You bet. Thanks very much, Matthew Chaminade there.
Yeah, we're speaking to Andrew Marriott. He didn't tell us whether he'd been for the final stint, though, which was the crucial thing. Don't want to give too much away at Pfaff Motorsport, but it's a terrific lineup. Matt Campbell, who's retaken charge of that car then, the number nine. Chaminade was only in for one 30-lap stint, so it's an interesting approach. When will Felipe Nasr be utilised towards the end? Another 20 seconds and we will have completed 20 hours of the 60th edition of the Rolex 24 live from Daytona. This is RS2 IMSA Radio, part of the Radio Show Limited network of channels.